Hi everyone, how's everyone doing? Staying cold? Trying to?
Yeah, I agree, definitely.
All right, we will start with roll call. So Caroline?
Here.
Dave?
Here.
Marcy?
Here.
Maxine?
Caroline?
No, she's not.
No, she's in Iceland.
She's in Iceland.
Oh, that's nice.
Mindy? Kate? Mimi? Susan? Carl?
Here.
Nancy? AM?
Here.
Ruben?
Present.
That was a very good showing, you guys. All right, we have Warren.
Excellent.
Since I grabbed you then.
Yeah.
Carl?
All right, I move to call this meeting to order. I don't know if I need to move, right? Just call this meeting to order.
Just call the meeting to order.
It's done?
Yeah.
All right, thanks again, everybody, for being here. Glad that we can all do this makeup session kind of thing, so glad that worked out. First order of business is for approval of the April 17 meeting minutes. If those have been reviewed, then is there a motion to approve?
I'll move to approve.
All right.
Meeting is adjourned.
I'll second. Susan seconds.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the meeting minutes from April 17 are approved. Our next order of business is a call to the audience. So would you just like to...
Yeah, call to the audience. Anybody? Okay, great.
Oh, that's it.
That's it.
Okay, one thing you need to do.
Yeah. We do need to officially elect the chairperson. So right now we have two co-chairs, Carl and Ruben. Any motions to elect a chairperson?
Ruben already elected.
So we had a...
He wasn't here last time.
He wasn't here though. So we went to Jackie. But he wasn't physically. So we could try that again. It would be a chair and co-chair.
I move to Carl as chair and second.
And seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Excellent.
Congratulations.
All right. Expecting the raise to move it.
Yeah. You get extra pizza.
Yeah, there you go.
The pizza goes home with you.
Perfect.
All right. And with that, we're going to jump to future agenda items. So field trip has been postponed till this fall. It'll be hopefully a little bit cooler. We will discuss dates kind of as we get closer, but just continue to keep that on your radar. We want to make sure that we still continue that. Summer meeting schedule, we discussed not having a July meeting because it's summer and everyone's got a lot going on and it's hot and it's one less thing for you to worry about. So just confirming that everyone is okay with that, there's no objections.
Okay. It could be August as well.
Yeah, potentially August as we continue to work through things too. Anything to add there, Patrick?
No, I think what you're saying. Possible summer, let's get into some production work, kind of finalize some of the stuff that we hear tonight, and then we can be in the fall as we hear up for kind of fall outreach.
Yep. Perfect. Okay.
Lipe.
Lipe. It's your show.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, do we have a kind of timeline of what we're doing here?
Yeah.
So we're going to update a couple of times.
Yeah. So essentially, what we're on schedule for right now, if you guys didn't hear, Susan asked what our timeline is for the project.
Not the project.
Just
what
we're
going
to get. So we're going to continue.
The task force.
The task force. We're going to continue to meet monthly or as needed. Obviously not over the summer, until we get to the end of the DCR phase, which is that December delivery.
So those are going to be some critical milestones that we want to reach, and ultimately we're going to be coming to this group before we finalize the DCR for that kind of final official action or recommendation from the Citizens Task Force to move forward with the DCR phase into final design. So we're committed until December. What we haven't decided on yet is how and how frequently to engage once we go from kind of this conceptual stage and alignment discussion into the more detailed final design, which will be starting next calendar year after we hit the DCR. The group will continue to exist, but because the nature of the work will become more technical, the meeting periods will probably be less frequent. So it's quite likely we might go to a bi-monthly or quarterly meeting schedule, but all of our other city task force have stayed in basically in position all the way into construction. So we're looking at a 3 to 4 year commitment. We know personnel are going to change, and we know meeting frequency will change. But that's kind of what I can tell you right now. Does that make sense?
What is this here?
Design concept report.
Design concept report?
Concept report.
I think the Grant Road Commission, for example, still meets periodically, but it's on an as-needed basis, so they're being very
important. I
would love having
the
Joint
City Commission
to
tell you how long it is until
I
sign the oath.
You've been appointed for 4 years. That said, if you walk away, we can't force you to attend.
So what you're telling me is taxes, debt, and city commission? Things you can't get away from?
I would tell you that if your appointing official gets loses their election, this committee doesn't have any council members who've appointed you, so you're going to be there as long as our director of transportation is there.
He's news.
Yeah, we wouldn't be there long
But a lot of that too depends on, you know, how often you guys want to meet as well. I mean, if you want to get into the weeds on all the technical stuff, everyone, we can certainly do that. If you want a higher level engagement where it's just you know, quarterly or something, we can certainly work through that as well. And it doesn't have to, it can change as we move along.
Cool. Well, I'm here to give you an update on what we have been working on the traffic analysis for the project. Some of this information, you already have seen it, but we took it to the city, you know, with Patrick, with the traffic group, with the signal groups, the group that manages the traffic signal, traffic lights, traffic signal to the city, to discuss the improvements, preliminary improvements for First Avenue. And so I want to start out with a quick graphic showing the process that we're following for this project. We talked about this last time, but when I walk, you know, over again for this meeting, the way we're using developing future projections for the volumes for 2045 to identify the needs of the corridor, we started with a PAC, the PIM Association of Government Travel Demand Model. These are models that estimate future volumes at a regional level. We use the model to get a traffic growth expected on First Avenue. From there, we take those roads and start developing 2040 movements at the intersections. So how many cars are going to be making a right at, you know, Prince? How many are going to be making a left when they're going northbound, or going through for all the approaches and also for all the intersections? Then we use a something like microscopic higher level model to identify the preliminary needs. Are there going to be a need for a right turn lane, for a left turn lane? What are the, you know, high level improvements that we want to need? And so we develop some of those preliminary recommendations. That's what we have here, and that's what we want to, you know, discuss later on the roadblock. Then, we're going to take that information and go into more detail level on a microscopic model, a DC model, when we're going to evaluate the corridor, evaluate all modes, make sure the transit can operate well, what we're providing, pedestrians, cyclists, cars, so that we can, you know, iterate multiple times so that we can get to the recommendations for the DCR for the planning phase. And so what we're doing there, next slide, please. We're taking a look at the volumes Ruben, I believe you pointed out about the Wildman expansion. So we got together with the city, collected some information. We know that, you know, the documentation that was provided to get the approval from the city, the permit, we got the information, and we got the volumes that they have projected. So they estimated there is an increase 600 trips per day because of an expansion. From those in the peak hour, it's going to be around 60 in the morning and 80 in the afternoon. So we collect this information, put in the model, and see what are going to be the impacts on First Avenue so that we can accommodate the expected demand for the Walmart expansion. Next. Similar, we know that we hear that Salad and Go is going to that corner. Some of the information is already on that model, but we took a look what they have, you know, or the preliminary recommendations, what they're planning to do, to see, to make sure that we can accommodate that, or at least be aware if they're, you know, if they're recommending a right turn, the direction lane, how do we include that into that, into the model. Next. And so with that, at this point, I indicated before, we're looking at changes in signal timing, using technology. In some cases, dual left, increased capacity. This is for only one location. And a couple of locations to add right turn lanes. This is just looking at the accommodated traffic demand. You have, you know, we have to talk about safety, railway impacts, or aspects, but we just focus on how we accommodate the traffic demand. And something to important to note is the way you look at strategies that look to minimize widening or, you know, impacts to a railway. So in this case, when I go to the first example, and we have the intersection on River. You're probably very familiar with this intersection on River and First. It's kind of, you know, maxed out, meaning that half dual left, at every approach, I guess you can say, well, you can go with triple left, but that's not really, you know, something that is operates well. Same with right turn lanes, you already have right turn lanes, so there's not much we can do in terms of capacity. I guess you can add a third lane, but it's gonna completely blow out the intersection. So
there really isn't a right turn lane on the southbound perfect.
On the southbound right, on the southbound right.
It needs one, but there isn't one. Southbound on First Avenue, the river.
Yeah, there is one.
There's a lane that's like really, really narrow, but there's no protected right turn like there is on the northbound.
Southbound?
First Avenue. Huh? Southbound. To West River Road, there is no protected right turn.
It's just except very well pavement.
It's a bike lane that transitions into a turn lane.
Yeah, and the bike lane is.
It disappears.
Disappears, and I've seen. What's called there?
Okay. Correct.
You can see where the wheels are.
You can see where the wheels are. Okay, we're here. But it's not, yes. Yeah. Yes. Correct. So we're looking at that intersection. We're looking at the 2045 traffic projections, and when we put those into the model, we're expecting a heavy delay on the westbound approach, particularly for the right turn lane. So this right turn lane is anticipated to expect volumes that exceed the capacity, meaning that the queues are going to extend onto River Road, the through lane, and we want to avoid those kind of conditions. Same on the left turns. You know, they are dual left, but it's operating at level of service E. So we want to take a look to see what we can do without having physical impacts. Next slide. So for that, we have a conversation with the city, with the traffic engineering group, the group that manages the traffic signals, and we're talking about, you know, what I'm going to detail, but more like technology. At every signalized intersection, there's a signal controller. It's kind of a computer. It's a big box, it has a computer that operates the signal. So there are multiple ways to operate the signals that can be more efficient. So we're meeting with them to say, you know, a couple of locations in Pima County use a different programming in that box, in that computer, to make the signal operate more efficient and accommodate better demand. So we went with the traffic group, have a conversation, and they agreed that this can be a feasible option for the future to enhance, you know, to increase the capacity of the intersection without having physical impacts. Next slide. The other one is to add signal phasing so that the southbound left can go with the westbound left at the same time. Again, if we can do that, we can minimize, accommodate, increase the capacity for this movement to a use and extend or to a through movement. And so, this is a table summarizing those scenarios. The first one, existing conditions, is operating around 30 seconds of delay on average, level of service D. The capacity, kind of the capacity of the section is operating around 80% of the capacity. In 2045, 60 was jumped without any improvements to 65 seconds, jumps a letter from D to E. And the 125 that was mentioned for the right-hand lane, that's something that we wanna avoid. And so with the improvements that I just mentioned, working with the computer in the intersection and adding some signal configuration, we can maintain the level of service to level of service V and lower this capacity below one. So that we can maintain the operations similar to this existing, with more volume, more cars, but they want to operate similar to existing conditions without making any physical improvements, widening that has an impact on safety and whatever.
So you're saying by changing the algorithm, basically, then you're maintaining that level of service instead of bumping it to the next force level?
The other solution could be to add lanes or something, but that's very complicated.
It's a very dangerous intersection.
It's a long term.
It's probably the worst intersection.
It's a long one.
Yeah, we're looking at this, and we're talking right now from the capacity or operation perspective, but we are aware and we have some ideas that we're going to run later by you to improve the safety of the intersection.
And those are actually shown in the road plan now, too, so we can look at that one. But I think to answer, just to piggyback on what Carl was saying, historically, the city's been very traditional in how they approach their signal operations and their phasing. And now that, you hadn't been, but now that the technology is starting to advance a lot rapidly, it's letting you do more with signal operations with less space. Before, we couldn't do that. And so if you needed to add capacity, you just had more turns to the coming, you just had to add lanes. I mean, that was really a function of this is the way it was. Now, with what Felipe can do and the way that they can program and operate the whole system and can talk and work together better, it just opens up options to where we can do more with less.
You mentioned the computers, you talked about the county. So is that intersection in the county?
It's in the city. Yeah, the county limits just where the pavement changes, just a few hundred feet north of here.
Oh, no.
I say, does everybody know? I mean, that's
In the central control, will they continue to have a flashing yellow turning westbound?
Say that again.
If in the traffic control, the flashing yellow that is permitted, will it still continue to be operational, making a left-hand turn going westbound? Because that intersection is a very long intersection.
Yep.
And yes, I agree, some of the flashing yellow lights are very well deserved, but in other areas, I wish they wouldn't even exist.
Yes. We don't have an answer yet, but we're looking into that. Because we also need to take into account, as you said, the safety that we're discussing. Mm-hmm. So this is just the capacity to accommodate the demand. But we did a conservative analysis, assuming that it won't be a yellow, that will be just a red arrow.
Right.
So we have the flexibility to evaluate from the safety perspective.
That would cut down on the accidents there. That would cut down on the accidents there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point that we should consider.
Thank you.
David.
I was just wondering, this is a general, more of a general question. Why are the protected less, not pedestrian operators on request? They just seem to happen, whether there's somebody there to the pedestrian or not. That really backs track. There's a lot of times you can go, there's a lot of times you scream, and you have to go.
The city's moving forward, with that technology, that approach, but it's not, it's not available at all intersections. Mm-hmm. But that would be the idea that for this corridor, that when somebody activate the face, it will be protected only.
Yeah,
so that there won't be a car trying to make a left and a pedestrian trying to cross the road.
A lot of people run that area.
Yeah. At this point, it's not feasible to do it on the corridor because the technology that is out there. But the idea is to bring, to, you know, to do the corridor with the technology so that that function can operate. Hmm?
Cool.
Cool.
Any other questions?
So, next slide. Again, you know, that's another example of, you know, how we're trying to use the signal controller, the computer, to optimize and to come to bear more than demand. In this case, we have the Wellmo intersection. Again, you're very familiar with this. First Avenue, there's a lot of commercial development in Wellmo. So as a result of that, when you're going, a lot of people going northbound, turn left onto Wellmo to access the commercial park. Some of them continue north. But this movement is very heavy. However, the opposite movement, this is apartment, so there are not many people making that southbound left. But if we, and when we're looking at the 2045 volumes, it's not gonna work. You know, we have to do something. So what we're trying to do is to,
sorry, Mike.
Excuse me?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Cool. That's
what you want, right?
Yep. Perfect. And so to.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't know why that keeps popping in.
Cool. No, perfect.
There you go. Okay.
So. And you know, I was indicating the way, you know, typically the city runs the signal is very, it's a typical way, it's a little conservative in my opinion, but conditions like these might be not the optimal way to run it. When we have heavy northbound left and very, you know, low demand for the southbound left, so that we have the two left going at the same time. But as you can see, the people, you know, going, or the cars basically going northbound, they are not moving. And over here, nobody's making a left. And so we're wasting time. So what we're trying to do is to do something like this, that, hey, you know, let's have this guy making a left, and nobody's making a left on the southbound, let's have the northbound going through, so we don't have to, you know, widen the road to accommodate the demand. However, when we do this intersection, it's still the northbound left is very heavy for a single left. So in that case, we are, you know, maximum we're trying to just use technology, but still there are some times that, you know, a physical widening is necessary. So in this case, we added, or we're proposing to add another left. And so when we add another left, you can see, again, this is the volume to capacity is the key parameter, you know, is 126 without that one, with a single left. For that, we would have to add another left.
Okay. Will you be also adding a median strip so that people heading southbound cannot make a left turn into the grocery store that's there and the gym that's there? Because what happens is that traffic backs up. Even with two left turns, it's still going to back up. And I've had I've seen people going to make a left turn, and there's somebody trying to make a right turn, and it's just horrible.
Yeah, we're trying to.
Good point.
Yeah, no, we're trying to. We cannot put probably a whole median for entire, you know, length, but definitely, you know, if there's going to be a median opening, it should be away from this intersection,
yes,
to come away.
Right away.
Yes.
So there's a lot of left turns.
Hmm? So here's a quick summary of this intersection. When we have existing condition, it's close to capacity. If we don't do anything with the future volumes, it's gonna not be good, you know, over capacity. So when we combine technology with a dual left, we bring back the intersection to the existing, similar to existing conditions, but, you know, with higher demand, with higher volumes. So that's you know, a plan, that's something that we've been working. We talked to you about this before, but we had the opportunity to run it by the city, by the traffic group, they are on board, so we're back saying, you know, implemented this.
And these are the only two we're showing tonight, like specifically, but it's the same approach all the way down.
Mm-hmm. What's a modified weight barrier?
Layman's terms. Yeah.
I don't know. That's something that I came. I don't know what to be honest. The official name. That's my own way to call it. And so what happened? If we go back to that.
That's like the technology.
Nope, not necessary. It's very simple. So. Oops.
This one.
Yeah, that one. So I call it that way because when you're programming the controller. You can put like barriers, these dark lines, to terminate the phases. And so the theory used four barriers to terminate the phases. So what we're proposing is to remove, to minimize the number of barriers so that there's more flexibility for those phases to end at different times. And so that's what I call it, modified frame barrier approach.
The ring is like what you're allowing, that's like your barrier around the intersection, and it's what you're allowing to move through the intersection at any given time. That's how I kind of visualize it. So, your normal intersection, you're going to have, if you have left turn lanes, like you'll have your first phase will just be all of your movements, and then the second phase is going to be your left turn movements, and then the third will be your other direction throughs, and then the fourth will be your left turns. And that would be kind of that standard. And then when he's saying modified, and it's okay, so I have these four barriers, these four rings that operate at different times. And then when Felipe's saying modified ring, and you can kind of see it where he, this is the way we look at it, and the way we do it, with the dashed red lines, like he's letting different movements overlap through that barrier at the same time, but only the ones that don't conflict.
So the ring barrier structure in the controller that is operating the signal. That's how I call it.
Yeah, so like when you go back to
this one,
you know, he's letting he's changing the way that signal operates by changing where those barriers, who he's allowing in and out. And historically on your network, I mean, back in the day, not even that long ago, I mean, the six camps, they were really just based on timers. You know, this one's going to go for this long, and then this one, and then. But now you can change the way those operate. And so they had to be very simple because they all had to work together to get like your progression up and down the street and all of those. And now we can change the way these operate based on time of day, based on movements, and there's a lot more flexibility in the program. So, because before, if you would do something like this, and you do something out of sequence, if you will. Like, it may help at one location, but you might overload the next location. And now we can build a network that accomplishes that.
So it's sophisticated enough to understand if the traffic is backing up, heading north on the.
It doesn't do it, like, it doesn't automate itself.
Okay.
But these guys can program it too.
Yeah, it has sensors.
It's
perfect.
Time.
Correct.
But yeah. Very mindful.
So, correct.
Not what it actually is happening at the moment.
To a point.
No, because it has sensors. It's going to have sensors to identify those cues. It won't be perfect, but at least, you know, we'll try to convey as best as possible.
It'll be improved.
Yeah.
We're not there to
because there are, you know, special events that happen down at the park, mm-hmm. which is. Just north,
that would affect that flow. Yes.
So will that recognize that there's a backup of traffic, orders more traffic, and allow more traffic to get through?
We're evaluating the possibility of this corridor to use that a technology that would allow to do that. At this point, I don't want to, you know, say yes, it will do it, but we're investigating, we're trying, we're heading that direction for that corridor to have that technology.
Now they're planning even more events down mm-hmm. in that part. So
it's quite active, yes.
Does the data show a difference in like traffic incidents from one model where they're going to protect the left turn lanes to one where they're
flowing traffic this way and left turn? Is there like a difference in crashes between those two options?
I don't think so. I think the key is that you need to have the signal facing the signal heads appropriate to do it. So if you want to just do it with a permissive movement, it's very difficult. That's when we're talking about the flashing yellow arrow. You need to have protected movements to provide to do it correctly. And so I think when you have protected movement and you have a, you know, red arrow, a red arrow saying no, you cannot do that, that's safe.
Unless you have a stupid driver.
And so that, you know.
I'm important to those as well. Like if I'm coming southbound, that's the question I have. It's like, oh, is that if I'm headed southbound and all the rest of Tucson, I'm used to having, I think, like left-hand turns happening at the same time or something.
That's a very good point. That's why we have to change the signals configuration to have red arrows so that it can control those movements. Because that's one of the reasons the cities operate in the intersection that way, because they don't have left, green or yellow or red turn arrows. And so that's why we have to change the signal heads to accommodate this.
So with this is giving you protected movements that aren't conflicting. Mm-hmm.
With another.
So. I understand that, yeah. Okay. With this new modified barrier system, what power source do they run on and what backup do they have for, you know, monsoon or power outage that will not interfere with the traffic or that will disturb the traffic? Or what is the power source?
It would be the same, TEP will provide power as it is right now, but we will design with the latest technology for to have a backup unit to, you know, do the base to, depends on the length of, you know, the emergency, but it will have a backup unit to support that.
And most of them, when they go off, all they do is just a yellow wind, that's it, and then it's chaos.
No, in this case, we'll design the signal to have a flashing backup unit. So you're going to see a big box, and then you're going to have a little box attached. And that is going to be the backup unit.
Makeshift generator.
Hamster on the
treadmill.
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah. Well, I think next slide. I think I covered everything. Cool.
Sure. Thanks. Any other last questions on operations or anything like that?
I think from our perspective, the big takeaway is just we were looking at every operational kind of solution before we're looking to invest in kind of concrete blowing up those roadways. And he's done an excellent job of looking at some creative solutions at these intersections so we don't have to continue to make them wider.
I would like to bring something to the table that's not on the agenda, and if I may, I mean, it's just an observation, and I don't know what the team suggests or is agreed upon. But during the construction stage and the monsoon approaching, all the crosswalks, they're very faded. And it would be awesome if they, before the construction, if they could be touched up and repainted, at least some major crosswalks, because they're not visible at all whatsoever. I pass by there every single day, and they're very faded, and especially in one of the corridors that we talk about from Prince to Roger. It's dark. You can't even tell the difference within the lights. So just as an observation and a possible request to have those crosswalks painted and be more visible for everybody.
Click it and fix it.
I don't know what your input on that is. That's my observation.
We can't have discussions on the agenda.
Yes, sir.
But noted, and we'll take a look with our maintenance crews to see.
Yes, that's why I have it as an observation.
Yeah, appreciate it.
And you were saying fix it and fix it as in like a way that you can report.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're very responsive. So if you just click it and fix it, they
okay.
Or you can organize with us and ask
more
of us to submit.
were here in April when we had our last meeting, we spent a fair amount of time looking at our 1 mile stretch from Prince to Ryan, where it's the most constrained. And I gave you kind of, well, we went over the goals. Again, one of our guiding principles is to minimize impacts. We saw these slides before, I just left them in. This is, though, that one where we do have a lot of residences, and it's really tight. So instead of that standard cross-section we can use pretty much everywhere else along the corridor, we're looking to make some modifications through here. These are the two that we showed that were kind of the extreme on either end. One is we keep our center median the same, because that allows for U-turns and other access. But then on the outside, we narrow our sidewalk, we narrow our bike lanes and buffers, and we take that extra space we need from the outside and kind of squeeze from the outside. On the bottom was our other alternative, kind of the extreme, which was leave everything on the outside the same, and then take all that space we need out of the median. And that was actually, it's about 12 feet that we were looking to gain. And so while the top option, we maintain access with medians and left turns and all that, we lose a lot of comfort on the outside for the bikes and pedestrians. On the bottom, we maintain that comfort, but we lose the access. And so those were kind of our two extremes, and we, with these, we talked about let's kind of split the difference in there. Can we do something a little different? And these were the two options that you guys asked to look at, which is let's go back to that narrower, just center turn lane. We can pick up 5 feet or so there, and then we would do that. We could put maybe some medians in places, kind of like Campbell. We call this the Campbell alternative, like Campbell North and Grant. And then the bottom was, and then we would still squeeze the outside a little bit, but not as much. The bottom alternative was we're going to stick with that narrower median, but we're going to also squeeze on the outside a little bit. The median's a little bigger, but we had to make sure we could still get access to new turns. So we developed both of these a little bit further, and I actually have a roll plot over here so we can look at them. More in detail, you can see it better than up here.
Yeah.
Because you can't see this great. So, but this is just the image of the roll plot. We'll look at it, we'll log it up, and we'll go, because I'd like to spend a lot of time over at the table here pretty shortly. But the top option is that when we have the center turn lane, we put a few medians out there to kind of start with, just to illustrate what it would look like, the size and location. That is all on the table. We're just trying to illustrate concept. And then the bottom is where we are wider at the intersection of the turn lane. We really narrow it down, and that restricts all of our access left turn through the actual blocks, but it allows for U-turn movements at the intersection. So we are. I just wanted to show you these up here first. Again, they're on this table. We'll look at them in a lot more detail. And actually, we're going to look at the whole world by a lot more detail. Because we really just want to look at the whole thing. And it's not great up here. You can't see it, so we can see it better over there. And again, we've talked about this before. I want to save our time. We've already gone down. We've reduced the length. That was done with the needs assessment. We've offset. We've allowed some curvilinear alignment here. We're doing these things. We are going with the larger 16-foot median in most places because it allows for easier access, and we're keeping that continuous. That allows us to create those left turn lanes and manage that access and provide the separation. This was our larger section, so if you recall North of Roger, we're adding some potential space. We have more space, so let's provide more amenity outside of the curb line. This is kind of that. We've identified those areas on the plot as well. This is the last slide for tonight, and this is the updated corridor map, and we're gonna go look at it over here. What we've done is we've made all these revisions.
We've actually started to put in some left turn lanes, left turn pockets in the medians. So I want you guys to look at those. We did it based on the city's access management guide. They have actually a document that tells us, you know, and that lays out our basis, but then we can modify that if necessary. On this plot, we are showing that two-way left turn lane, because that was in that Prince to Rogers section. So we want to look at both of these, but maintaining access was a really high priority, maintaining that left turn as opposed to the U-turn. So we do show that on here, just to show something on here. We can go back and forth, we can change that. We show right turn lanes in most locations, but we are noting them now and kind of hash some of them out as, hey, these are the areas we're still looking at based on the work Felipe is doing and what we just talked about. We're reserving space now, but if we don't need them, we're not going to put them in. If we can make it operate without them. So we're trying to keep that footprint small. Let's see what else. We've got the floodplain on here. We've got just all the things we've talked about, we've identified. We've just developed this a lot further from the last time we saw it. And so I can answer questions now if you have any big picture ones. But if not, we can head over there. And so, like Susan, you mentioned the just south of Wetmore, the left turn into the grocery store and all. Like, we're showing that median built out with where the turn lanes could be and things like that. So, as always, you're like two steps ahead of us. No, it's great. It's great. I'm glad you're bringing those things up. But that's so start looking at those, you know. What's that? Oh, Nancy. Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. In that, excuse me, that pinched area where you showed two different designs.
Yes.
Has there been any study on what pedestrian crossroad traffic there is between there?
Do we have any pedestrian counts through there?
We don't have counts, but it is a hot spot, specifically the south of Pastime to Prince. It's a hot spot for pedestrian crashes and pedestrian fatalities, and as a result of that hog at Pastime Road is identified as our second highest priority hog location in the city. So there is evidence of use up there. And obviously a safety challenge.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Campbell alternative control
lead. Yeah.
Medians. What's like the, is there any data or feedback on that? Like, does it, do people crash the medians? Like, is it, like, I know it's hard because first of all, there's probably a lot more traffic in Campbell, so I know it's not a direct comparison, but I'm just curious if there's any, like, feedback from that, or?
I don't know if there's like a, these all anecdotal for the most part, and it's pretty polarizing. Some people like them, some people absolutely hate them.
Which is why I'm asking for data.
Yeah, I know. I'm not aware of any specific for those. I don't know if Patrick, you guys have done anything that.
They do get hit, they're fairly short. I think we've talked about these are going to be more substantial or
correct.
Even longer. There is going to be some compromise on safety because you're not getting that full access control.
Yeah.
So just at the functional level, we know having those islands with that more permissive left turn, there's going to be less pedestrian refuge and there's going to be more opportunities for those left turn conflicts. That's kind of the trade-off that we have to wrestle with. One of the things we're seeking tonight is guidance from all of you of which of these alternatives that you want to move forward.
Is that a double left turn center lane? I know that like this is going to be a trade-off in my road because I don't love those, but I also don't love U-turns. Like many people do U-turns. Is there, kind of going back to like, is there data on like, are there more collisions when there are U-turns, like forced U-turns like that? Like, because then you're relying on people's judgment for an entire movement that takes.
And I think that then becomes an operational with do we allow those to be permissive or are they just a protected U turn movement with the green arrow and how we. A lot of that's going to depend on that operational aspect of it. But yeah, that's always you have to make U turns. As a driver, I don't like making U turns because there's always something there.
also think it's the nature of the speed of those crashes. If you've got that protected left turn, that U-turn is going to be happening at a pretty low rate of speed. So you might see more kind of fender-bender type crashes, but if you've got that permissive left where somebody's coming at 40 miles an hour, that's going to result in a much more severe crash.
And then the other thing, I mean, Carolyn, you brought it up, and Patrick brought it up too, the Campbell, those planter median islands up in Campbell, they're small. I mean, and I don't, they're like 15 or 20 feet. Like, they're pretty small. I think that we at least doubled the size, and most of ours are bigger. And like I said, we just popped a few in there as just to kind of give an idea of what those could look like. And we can make those a lot bigger. We can change the look of that so they function more like medians, except in certain locations. It's just kind of all on the table at this point. It's just, we want to show what that use of space looks like.
Do you have any concept of what, how that kind of a barrier deters jaywalking? And if there's no protection for somebody crossing the street, does that deter them enough? Or are they still going to try to fire them? So,
you're talking user behavior.
I know,
it's, yeah.
Does it make it more dangerous for access by having those?
So this is one of those things where we've approached this as human behavior is going to continue to be human behavior, and we're designing that as a base condition. Federal studies on these medians have shown about a 30 to 40% crash reduction with pedestrians, because people are going to cross off signal. We know that. People are going to cross again where there's no intersection. We know that. By putting those there, what you're doing is you're giving somebody a place to stand where a vehicle isn't going to be, and that has a huge benefit. Mm-hmm. As a pedestrian, which needs to look left, that clears, you go stand on that median, mm-hmm. you look right, that clears, and then you go.
I'm talking about those ones that stand, they're like a planter.
That channelize people. Yeah, I think those are going to have less permeability, and those are going to channelize people to the crosswalks they want them at. Trade-off is, you do see violations of those too. People climb over them, fall over them. So, that's a great comment. I think there's two ways to design them, where you they're more hostile to kind of standing and waiting, though people are going to continue to do that. But as a investment in the street, it has a huge safety impact.
I just want to like share a kind of philosophical quote that emerges that's like to reduce jaywalking or make it inconvenient. And I think that's where that data question is helpful, because people are going to, like you said, like, people are going to cross the road, and they're going to cross the road no matter what, all over the road, because crosswalks are also really far.
Especially in the heat.
Yeah, and so it's like anything, like, so I'm curious of what the trade-off is, especially back to our core values or whatever it was that we are, yeah, our, what is it called?
Our values?
Yeah, our goals, right. I think that will be helpful to keep in mind when we go look at the options, because it's like, I also think making U-turns is like I don't think about Taipu, and I was on Campbell, south end of Campbell, like for this past university, and I was like, dang, I have to go further to make a U-turn, right? So I'm not like unbothered by them. And also just like the safety impact. When I'm walking, I'm grateful there's a median. Even if I'm at a crosswalk, I'm grateful there's a median nearby, because that means less like chaos in the road. So I just, those numbers would be really helpful when we look at the options, because if our goal is pedestrian safety, pretty high up there, and that would be helpful to weigh out like, oh, okay, I'm willing to be a little bit inconvenient for this safety improvement.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying, is rather than these planters that are like hiding people.
Right.
Instead of having the little median, so that there is a place for a step up on a jaywalker to avoid getting hit by people speeding, and then we see some experience the whole time.
So are you talking about the vertical aspect versus the
yes.
and not necessarily?
Yeah, we won't do the vertical part of it. We'll do the median part of it.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Yeah.
That was my
idea. Okay, sorry, I misunderstood what you were saying.
Yeah.
Yep. Not the vertical way of being here. No.
So,
yeah, let's go. You guys are ready.
So we're going to kind of run this as a more open workshop of the project feedback here. Some of the feedback we're looking at would be, you've identified some hog locations. We'd love to hear your thoughts on where we're moving now. Proposing thoughts. Any of your thoughts on the intersection, or the right turn lanes,
I got it.
Or any of the general like safety concepts or considerations? We've got sticky notes, we've got pens, project teams, so we'll just kind of keep it open and flexible, but we really want to hear your thoughts on where we come today.
Well, if you were free to just write, you put on a sticky note, you can just write and write up the marker over here.
I just want to wrap up with a couple items and get started. So, we've got two options tonight, so we're looking forward to finishing this meeting. Thank you, I hope you were able to engage with the role plot and how it made sense to you. And first off, I guess, overall takeaways, do you think we're kind of following the direction you've all been providing, all the discussions we've been having? You've been pretty good at what we're showing. This is very conceptual at this point. We're going to come back and we're iterating and refine this design multiple times through this committee. Kind of gut check, everything's looking good to all of you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're good to proceed. So here is our big, great, I'm happy to hear that, and thank you for working with us over the last year to get us to this point. I think this is really significant progress.
Yeah.
And
year, right?
Yeah.
We meet in June.
Yeah,
so
much.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary,
man.
And we can take it in kind of two different ways. We've got those two alternatives that we're looking at, and we've talked through a lot of the trade-offs there in this skin section between Roger and Prince. Now, we were kind of setting that up to be a decision tonight, so you could give us a direction on which one to move with, but I saw you all put a lot of comments back there. So option two is we could take those back as long, along with the comments that we provided as a city team, and make a determination as a project team based on what you've told us and bring that back. Option B, or A, I guess going backwards, would be we have a vote tonight and you tell us which one you prefer. Let me see a no to that, give it to the project team, read the comments, anybody else?
Yeah.
Does doing that option, saying it to the project team, does that A, slow down the timeline for the overall project, and B, does that bring it back? Is that just like they're compiling on comments and then bringing it back to
the king?
They're not like making a decision on that.
So what we would do is if we go with that option, we'll read all of your comments, we'll read the comments the project team or the city staff put together, we'll meet with the project team, and we'll bring back an alternative in the fall that best aligns with what we heard from all of the different groups. We can then take an action at that point. But we want to just kind of start designing one of the versions instead of continuing to iterate on designs for both of those versions to try to make them better. The other option would be if you give us direction, basically we would stop all consideration of the other one and move forward with that alternative. There might be tweaks here and there, but I'm hearing that you guys maybe have more comfort with just kind of following the comments and coming back with an option. Is that a fair read on the line?
Okay, so we're trying to decide, this is just for the Prince Rock.
Correct.
Like, not this whole thing.
No.
Just, okay. Well, I personally feel like maybe we should consider, like, not giving them long tenuous, at least doing the smaller meetings. Like, there has, it's going to be, I think, different than the rest of the project, just because looking at that, at all the houses that have residential, I think that design makes sense, like having some smaller meetings, and then there are sections where we're probably going to have that.
So more access versus having the U-turn at.
I think there was one even part of that area where it was like super residential. I don't know, I'll have to comment.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you can come in wrap up too, we'll leave it out there.
Can we vote on that?
Well, yeah, that's
I think bring it forward. I think we should bring that option to a vote.
I bring that option to a vote. Or the option to
the distinction between them both to help compare them is the one had the skinny median where we don't have access. We are forcing U-turns versus, so it's two different design approaches. Skinny mediums where we force U-turns or wider where we allow access. That's kind of that design direction. So like if you guys are comfortable with one of those two directions,
Yeah.
Then we have enough to proceed forward taking into account the seasons.
So I'm really not looking to proceed with the one that has more access and turnout in.
Wider. That's the wider one.
Wider medium.
Right. The whole roadway is the same bit.
Yeah, I say that I'm prepared to make kind of a decision on at least that section.
And have
that design move forward in that direction.
I don't think that continues to be in there. It's
like,
well, I don't think we need to explore that iteration, but we need to work on the other one. Which is, I think, what they're looking for, so they can go more into detail and see if they're
Is that line of thought?
Yeah.
Exactly. Guys, I think there's going to be a vote if you want to come back for
you.
So I think the motion was to advance the more access and focused option.
I feel like I didn't get like a lot of time with that section because I was working at other areas. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's one long skinny median with no access, and or an option that has more access. And I think they're just looking for a direction.
Which avoids U-turns.
Which avoids U-turns if there's more access versus the U-turns.
And it doesn't cut off those neighborhoods from each other. Because like there are some people that drive all the way across first to access those other neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Right. By going the wider, would they be more acquisitions? Mm-hmm.
No, both were kind of designed to be fit within the tight constraint of that section. If we wanted more acquisitions, we would have made the corridor more continuous with the other sections, and that would have those properties.
I just want to rephrase our goals too. Like I hear you saying access, and I also hear splitting up those neighborhoods, people drive between the neighborhoods, and putting in a median where you could walk to the neighborhood.
True.
You have shade, the sidewalk, and bike lane.
There would still be median.
Yeah.
There's just not. Yeah.
But they're
not just scale on that either. You have to. They just kind of. So I think, I guess what I'm saying is like the option that I think we should afford is not one long skinny median, but considering a way to kind of still provide like friendly control for pedestrians, but not completely. I'm just concerned we're going to keep iterating on all these iterations and it's going to get confusing. And so I was just saying that we should maybe give them a direction to work on.
I think also an advantage to that wider center with those islands that you could get shady shrubbery that way, whereas like the skinny ones, like you're probably not going to plant anything there, right?
Yeah, that's true. I'm not saying shade in the middle of the road, but I'm saying given like all of the other design improvements in the space that make it more attractive to walk, to bike, to ride the bus. I don't want to prioritize, and we have decided not to prioritize in that way for our goals. Mm-hmm. That to me is, I'm just hearing in the discussion, access and people driving. Mm-hmm. And I think we then compromise the commitment that we sought out for, which is increasing safety for people. And the data shows that a longer median increases the safety for all people, walking, biking, driving. Why would we not go with that option? I'm curious about that.
I think because that section right there is a ton of houses. Mm-hmm. And there's people that are going to be living there. And I'm concerned about them. Like, I walk and I buy and I drive that section. Mm-hmm. But I'm concerned about the people actually living. There is, I think something else that I'm opening up to personally is like, I completely agree. I agree. I think we should prioritize pedestrians. But I think that each section of First is so different, and this is one section where I'm like, maybe we need to like consider these different options, like maybe the one long. I mean, I already was thinking that one long skinny median is going to be tough. Because if you look at that design, if we just put a long skinny median in, that's right where the school is, and everyone's going to be doing U-turns right there by the school, by the long line.
So I think based on that, like just that, like I would like to look at that. I don't feel like I have had enough time to focus on that section to make a motion for a direction in that, to make a vote for a direction in that way. I would really be open to that kind of discussion or look at it. I just didn't get that time. So if that affects your motion,
What about sending it back to the drawing board, like?
For like something like that, I know it stalls it a little bit, but I, yeah. I think I feel rushed moving to a vote, that's all I'll say.
So
one of the other options we talked about too would be that we could kick that back to the project team. We could look at the totality of the comments, the discussion we had tonight, and bring back a design recommendation. So not forcing a vote tonight, but I think we would want to move forward with a single kind of alternative that we would bring back for your evaluation. I don't think what we want to be doing is kind of continue to advance both of these options, because that is going to cost us kind of our project schedule. So.
Yeah, I think that's what I was just trying to like see if we could give them some direction.
So what you need from us tonight is basically like on that section at least, a singular decision.
I think the decision could also be direction for the project team to bring back an alternative after we've evaluated maybe some of the things you're mentioning at the school, like past time, the concepts that are being introduced there. Maybe there's a hybrid version that we could look at that accomplishes both things to some degree. I think we've already identified some options where we could extend the medians. So you're functionally, that was just throwing them in there as a first pass. Those could be much longer, so it could kind of provide a version where you are still providing that pedestrian refuge, but not impacting the access as much. There might be a few locations that we can come up with some creative solutions in terms of meeting that access. So I guess that would kind of be the two options that we would be seeking for.
I think anything you could do to avoid the U-turns at the major intersections would be very productive in terms of reducing collisions and impact.
You mean Prince and Roger.
Right.
And theoretically, if we went with the wider street option, theoretically that could run a median all the way down. Right, I mean, necessarily want to do that, but it could accomplish the same thing of like having protection all the way down that street. But it's just whether it's that big or that big, right?
Yeah. It depends on how access and remote that impact, yeah.
So like in I think sort of in theory, like we're just kind of deciding how big that median's gonna be. Like is it gonna be the big one or the
narrower
wide.
Can we go back to the slide that shows the different medians?
The cross section.
Yeah.
I'll put them over the top. So the top one is what we're looking at. And so this would be, I'll just draw a shape in here too. In some locations you would have a physical median out here. Not everywhere. So this is still, we do have a 6-foot bike lane, we do have the bumper still, we do have our fairly wide sidewalk up and down. So this is the wider one, and then this is the much narrower one where we have that 4-foot. And that's really what Carl was just pointing out, is really the basis of this, is that how big is that median in the middle, and do we have enough space there to allow it?
If you're squeezing it that tight, one thing to keep in mind too, as well, you've got continuous, you've got the access control benefits. You've also got a pedestrian standing on 4 feet of concrete if they are doing that two-stage crossing, versus standing on an 11-foot island, which may not be spaced as continuously. So from a comfort perspective, if you're on the skinny median, you're going to have cars on the side. So there's a lot to digest here, so we'll follow your kind of recommendation.
But if there is like just a feeling towards which of these like guiding principles you prefer, or things like that, then that's all super helpful.
Yeah, there's also just like the effect of, even though the pedestrian element of it, but then in my experience, it's like when that is continuous, it feels like the road is narrower, even though it's not. And so it's like that visually helps.
Speed mitigation that way.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing too, we just kind of, we just put something in here to show, we put something that would allow that access anywhere. There's, you know, there's no reason that, you know, we could, sorry, we could work through this and then, you know, make this whole thing.
So the main door is wide, like arrow.
Right.
Yeah, that's really
that's not so long. Not how long.
Yeah.
Like, it could go the length of Roger.
The wider, and think of it as the wider allows us the ability to provide access at some point. We don't know what that is yet.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the narrower, that does force us to do the U-turns at the intersections.
So the wider gives us more options, basically. At least what
you're doing. Correct. The wider gives you more options, and the trade-off then is this, really this lesser space on the, you know, here on the
But the sidewalk is the same.
The sidewalk is still the same.
We're squeezing the bike buffer a little bit, but I think there's areas where we can probably find a little space there.
Yeah.
That's what I
think. This one.
So you're losing, yeah, you're just moving a little bit here and there. Because really, we're going from 11 to 4. We're trying to pick up 17. It's not a huge pickup, but it does matter.
Is the wider option, is it within practice to have those be elongated? So you could have like the U-turn squeezes even with a wider.
No.
You need
you would just do the shared left turn lane instead of the U-turn option.
Yeah.
So by going wider, you're then kind of committing to having the shared left turn lane option continue.
So I think there could be a version here where we might find a hybrid solution where we could, because what we have to do is taper out where we have additional right of way, and we're just looking at this. We haven't gotten there yet. So if we're starting at 11, potentially we could find some spaces where we could do more controlled access and narrow it where we have more open access, if that makes sense. So we could go from 11 to say the 16 feet that we would need by, you know, kind of offsetting by 5 feet. Where we've got the space. We're just probably going to be introducing a little bit more curvature into the roadway.
Which that would be a final design type of thing.
Yeah, so I guess that's just kind of like why I was like, oh, that does like what we're making a decision towards, just like continuing that, you know, left hand turn, the shared left turn, which are kind of like a topic.
But that's not going to be running all the way that section,
no.
Though.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's going to be periodic.
Pockets, yeah.
Periodic.
Versus Roger.
Versus the other option, the narrow medians.
Where you can only do.
It kind of eliminates that. Yeah. Is my understanding.
And further down, we'll have more options as the road gets wider.
So I think
we should just. I don't know the procedure, but people.
Yeah, so we've got a motion. Did we get a second on the motion?
I think I said it.
We got a second on the motion. So regardless, we're going to have to go through with the motion, because friendly amendment. Yeah, sorry, we got to write up a little bit. We kick us out. There could be a friendly amendment or a counter motion, but with the motion on the floor, do we have a, got a motion and a second? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Any, what is it called?
Abstain.
Alright. So we have one abstention.
Alright. Well, it looks like we have a motion to move forward with the wider median option. We'll bring back an alternative on that. I think that we'll try to meet a lot of the goals that you were discussing as well, because we do kind of look at opportunities to extend these islands to kind of make the best of both worlds.
Yeah, to do that, with the wider, I think you said for traffic, and that's what a road is for. But I don't think you're sacrificing bicycle and pedestrian,
right,
distracting them that much. I don't think they're still going to have things, okay? And I just don't see them sort of trade off there.
Yeah, I'm thinking about how to do.
Good point, Nick.
All right.
We're going to proceed.
Yeah. So I guess based on those discussions, we were thinking that we would kind of hold off on the rest of the summer and get more into production with this. Are we good on all of that? We can reconvene. I don't think we need to reconvene probably before September. I think we've got a lot of work in front of us. We're going to iterate through all these comments we've received and bring back an updated cross-section for you. I think next time we see you, we'll have better certainty around the intersections and some of the other things that we still need to work through, what the bike lanes are going to look like, what the bus stops, the bus pull-ups, bus stops in the street are going to look like. So those are all discussions that are yet to come. Really preparing us for that second round of public outreach in the fall, keeping us on schedule again for that DCR level submittal at the end of this calendar year. So I think we are on track and on course. And yeah, does anybody have any final thoughts or comments?
All right, I move to adjourn this meeting.
Adjourned. Thank you for all the comments, too. Yes. 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 We've got your comments and we've got your discussion comments that'll be in the meeting record as well.
Yes, it is.
Thank you for listening to us.
Thank you.
Good job. Good job.